It's Mummy's Weekly Supplement, and now Sarah Ward talks to the producers of the new Clash film, Rude Boy. I should point out that in the interview there are dialogue extracts from the film which contain language that could be offensive.
Garage Land from The Clash, and on Mummy's Weekly this week we look at the film Rude Boy. With me in the studio, the producers and director of the film, David Mingay, and Jack Hazan. Now, the music papers have been reasonably attracted to the film in some ways, but the daily press have hated it. How do you stand on the critics, Jack?
I don't see it. The daily papers have hated it, actually.
They've tended to come up with sort of shock horror probe headlines, haven't they?
One lady did, who I think is possibly a Mary Whitehouse supporter, slammed us.
Popular daily papers I'm talking about, really.
Yes, it's Margaret Hicksman of the Daily Mail who slammed us and said it was filth and rubbish because she didn't really want to look at that side of Britain at all. I mean, she's an older lady, and she didn't want to know about that sort of thing.
Were you making a film that was basically about the politics of youth in Britain, or the lack of politics amongst the youth of Britain, or about the politics of the rock business as expressed by a band like The Clash?
Well, I think we were making a film to entertain people, predominantly younger people, and it basically concerned the life and times of a young boy called Ray Gange, who was a real person, and who lived in Brixton. He now lives in Los Angeles, by the way. He got out, and his attraction to the band The Clash, and what happened when he tried to become a roadie.
And you were portraying The Clash with warts and all, in a sense, weren't you?
No, I don't see why you say that, actually. No, absolutely not.
Well, in lots
they haven't got any warts.
In lots of so-called rock films, the band is sort of up on a bit of a pedestal, isn't it?
You don't see them running through woodland glades and that sort of thing, that's for sure. You see them going about their business, which is, you know, going on the concert halls around the country, which is what they were famous for.
Actually, I would suggest to you that it's also all been very useful publicity for you, hasn't it? The fact that The Clash appeared to fall out with you over the film Rude Boy.
This is absolute nonsense. It hasn't been useful at all, because now we have a load of confused fans. They're not sure whether they should go to the movie or not go to the movies. It really hasn't been very useful at all.
One of the sadnesses, I think, for The Clash's fans in particular, is that because of this dispute that you've been involved in, there's not going to be much chance of hearing the music from the film out on an album.
Well, this is certainly regrettable, but what can we do? I mean, so we've brought you along we brought you along the tapes, and we hope you play as much music as possible within this slot. Because it may never be heard again.
But remember, the hit song from the album, Rudy Can't Fail, they put it onto their new LP instead of leaving it as a single this week. We should all be hearing it on Capital this week. But of course, Rudy Can't Fail is the title and the message of the film, and that's what they wrote. They wrote a song about Ray, and that's the hit song of the film.
And that's on the album London Calling.
I think that most people who've seen the film would agree that the sequences involving The Clash in concert are very good indeed. Was this something you're particularly proud of?
Well, we're proud of the whole thing. We think the whole thing is sort of an integrated movie. I mean, I find it very, very glamorous when I come out. I feel very high.
But did you find that you captured something of the rawness of an energetic band on stage?
The Clash are a very raw, energetic band, and they're very, very colourful, and their light shows are amazing, and we've got all that. And it's not just a question of standing at the back of a hall with a lens artificially bringing The Clash close to us, the viewer. We were actually there on stage, you know, feet away from them, you know.
Did a lot of the footage end up on the cutting room floor?
No, very little. We used virtually everything.
I think we'll go back to some music from the film now. And this is Police and Thieves by The Clash from the film Rude Boy. That's The Clash there with Police and Thieves from the film Rude Boy. Jack Hazan, The Clash are now saying that they'll only take responsibility for their performance in the film and for nothing else.
Well, that's fair enough, as they're in it for virtually the whole 2 hours of the movie. That's fair enough. That means they take responsibility for the whole of the movie.
But would you not have liked them to be a bit more involved, quite honestly?
They are involved. I mean, I don't see why they now say they're not.
But involved in the kind of picture of Britain you were painting?
They're totally involved. I mean, I'm sorry. What I am sorry about is that they're away in America all the time.
Can we turn to some dialogue from the film now? Can we pick up a sequence of the film where Ray, the anti-hero, I suppose we could describe him as such, gets picked up by two coppers outside 10 Downing Street? Could you tell us a little bit of the scenario that went into making that particular sequence?
Yes, well, what happened is that Ray, who works for beer money in this sex shop in Soho that we all know and love, he leaves it late at night, and he, in a rather good mood, walks along Whitehall, past 10 Downing Street, singing one of the Clash songs, Complete Control. While doing so, there's a sort of a waiting plainclothes car, out of which two coppers get out and harass him. And Ray's not in the mood for it at all, and eventually gets thrown in the car until he's drunk.
And that's the sequence where Ray gets picked up by two coppers outside 10 Downing Street in the film Rude Boy. There seems to be at times amongst people who've seen the film a little bit of conflict in understanding exactly where your politics were going. That one portion of the people who've seen the film seem to feel that it was the politics of the rock scene, if you like, and others think that it was a much deeper political statement about Britain today. I mean, were your intentions just that, the second? David?
For instance, the kind of people who complain,
they just seem to be a bit confused.
Well, somebody told me that, you know, all those the left-wing people said that the politics was specious. So I said it's not surprising, because we show that a lot of the left-wing groups that are holding rallies and shouting out loud and putting up posters, that their arguments are specious. So really, the way we're really looking at the politics is more in the way the Clash is looking at politics, which is like the truth is only known to gutter snipes. But really, what we're trying to say is that it's not just left and right. It's like haves and have-nots. And it's not, when there's not that much choice between Labour and Conservative, there must be another way to think about it or look at it. It doesn't mean we're saying you've got to look at it. On the contrary, we're saying you've not got to look at it, like you're being told you've got to look at it on the television, on the radio, everywhere.
Have the police commented at all about sequences particularly involving them in the film?
Well, no,
would you expect them to? I mean, would you like to enter into some kind of argument or discussion with them?
It's terribly easy to slag off the police or anybody. It's terribly easy, and I think that's what some extreme people would like us to do. But we're not going to fall into that trap, and neither did we do so on the movie. I don't think we've had no reaction at all from the police, and I don't expect any, you know. They're just shown as they are.
Sometimes they're shown as rather charming fellows.
This is absolutely true. When they, you know,
not in the sequence we just heard, in the kind of language that was being used.
In a sequence following that, they're shown to be very, very jolly, and they're laughing. There are about 1,500 police lined up outside a hall, and they're all laughing and joking. They look very, very nice indeed.
Is the kind of language that is used in the film most of the time something that's going to be off-putting in the end?
Well, I find that very surprising and rather hypocritical if people say that to me, having seen the film or anticipating what they might hear in the film, because 80%, 90% of teenagers today speak in this fashion. Should we then have cleaned up their language? We couldn't do that.
And I tell you another thing is that I'm sure that they picked it up at home from their parents.
Would you not, though, also want people to see the film who aren't actually of the generation that the film's about? And perhaps through seeing the film, understand something of what that generation's going through.
Well, after Margaret Hinksman had written this article saying it was undiluted filth or something in the Daily Mail, a woman wrote in to the letters page and said she thought that all parents should see the film because they ought to know what's going down with their kids.
Another major criticism has been that it's terribly long, the film.
The film is an epic. It's of epic proportions. I mean, Ben-Hur runs about 3 or 4 hours and nobody complains. This runs only 2 hours, which is not that long. And a greater part of it, or a large part of it, is the fantastic music of The Clash. It's about 40 minutes of music in four-track stereo.
Also, I'll tell you why. People who say that, they're usually older people who don't know or can't understand Clash songs, Clash attitudes. And actually, the songs really pick up arguments you've seen in the film. So when you've been through a police, seen 1,500 police in a difficult situation with demonstrators and so on, then you hear police and thieves, The song is really picking up the argument. But if people aren't inclined to give the Clash any credit for what they're singing about, or the fact that they sing about very serious matters, not just love songs, then they just write off the songs, and they're bored during the songs, maybe, if it's not their kind of music. But I think that's caused that problem.
The discussion about racism in the film does come rather late on in the film, which seems perhaps a little out of place in the sense that racism is one of the big discussions of our times and perhaps should have been a more central theme.
I think it is the central theme, one of the central themes, and it begins right at the very beginning of the movie, contrary to what you say. It's just that it is then explained towards the end of the movie.
Yes, well, the explanation comes so much later on in the movie, and as it is so long, there seems to be a great gap.